shot her a glance, and she lifted a brow.
What?
You've come here before, Rowan said. You came to search the ruins. That's why you smelled of ash, too.
Adian said, Really, Aelin? Don't you ever sleep? Kaol was watching her now, too, though maybe that was to avoid looking at the bodies littered around the halls.
What were you doing here? The night you interrupted my meeting with Brullo and Ress.
Aelin studied the cinders of the oldest stalls, the soot stains, the smells. She paused before one shop whose wares were now nothing but ash and twisted bits of metal.
Here we are,
she trilled, and strode into the hewn rock stall, its stones burned black.
It still smells like opium, Rowan said, frowning.
Aelin brushed her foot over the ashy ground, kicking away cinders and debris.
It had to be somewhere.
Ah. She swept away more and more, the ash staining her black boots and suit. At last, a large misshapen stone appeared beneath her feet, a worn hole near its edge. She said casually, Did you know that in addition to dealing opium, this man was rumored to sell hellfire?
Rowan whipped his gaze to her.
Hellfire? Nearly impossible to attain or make, mostly because it was so lethal. Just a vat of it could take out half of a castle's retainer wall. He would never talk to me about it, of course, Aelin went on. No matter how many times I came here, he claimed he didn't have it. Yet he had some of the ingredients around the shop, all very rare, so there must have been a supply of it here. She hauled open the stone trap door to reveal a ladder descending into the gloom. None of the males spoke, as the reek of the sewers unfurled. She crouched, sliding onto the first rung. And Adian tensed, but he wisely said nothing about her going first. Smoke-scented darkness enveloped her as she climbed down, 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 until her feet hit smooth rock. The air was dry, despite their proximity to the river. Rowan came next, dropping his torch onto the ancient stones to reveal a cavernous tunnel and bodies. Several bodies. Some of them nothing but dark mounds in the distance, cut down by the Volg. There were fewer to the right, toward the aviary. They'd probably anticipated an ambush at the river mouth, and gone the other way, to their doom. Not waiting for Adian or Kaol to climb down, Aelin began following the tunnel, Rowan silent as a shadow at her side, looking, listening. After the stone door groaned closed above, she said into the darkness, When the king's men set this place alight, if the fire had hit that supply, Rifthold probably wouldn't be here anymore. At least not the slums, and probably more.
Gods above,
Kaol murmured from a few paces behind. Aelin paused at what looked like an ordinary grate in the sewer floor, but no water ran beneath, and only dusty air floated up to meet her.
That's how you're planning to blow up the clock tower. With hellfire,
Rowan said, crouching at her side. He made to grab her elbow as she reached for the grate, but she sidled out of range.
Aelin, I've seen it used, seen it wreck cities. It can literally melt people.
Good, so we know it works then.
Adian snorted, peering down into the gloom beyond the grate.
So what? You think he kept his supply down there?
If he had a professional opinion about hellfire, he kept it to himself.
The sewers were too public, but he had to keep it near the market,
Aelin said, yanking on the grate. It gave a little, and Rowan's scent caressed her as he leaned to help haul it off the opening.
It smells like bones and dust down there,
Rowan said, his mouth quirked to the side.
But you suspected that already.
Kaol said from a few feet behind,
That's what you wanted to know from Nelly, where he was hiding, so he can sell it to you.
Aelin lit a bit of wood from Rowan's torch. She carefully poised it just beneath the lip of the hole before her, the flame lighting a drop of about 10 feet, with cobblestones beneath. A wind pushed from behind, toward the hole, into it. She set aside the flame and sat on the lip of the hole, her legs swinging in the dimness beneath. What Nelly doesn't know yet is that the opium monger was actually caught 2 days ago. killed on sight by the king's men.
You know, I do think Arobin sometimes had no idea whether he really wanted to help me or not.
It had been his casual mention of it at dinner that had set her thinking,
planning.
Rowan murmured, "So his supply in the catacombs is now unguarded." She peered into the gloom below.
"Finders keepers," she said,
and jumped.
Chapter 50. How did those lowlifes keep this place a secret?
Aelin breathed as she turned to Kaol.
The four of them stood atop a small staircase, the cavernous space beyond them illuminated in flickering gold by the torches Adian and Rowan bore.
Kaol was shaking his head, surveying the space. Not a sign of scavengers, thank the gods. Legend has it that the Shadow Market was built on the bones of the God of Truth.
Well, they got the bones part right. In every wall, skulls and bones were artfully arranged, and every wall, even the ceiling, had been formed from them.
Even the floor at the foot of the stairs was laid with bones of varying shapes and sizes.
"These aren't ordinary catacombs," Rowan said, setting down his torch. "This was a temple."
Indeed, altars, benches, and even a dark reflection pool lay in the massive space. Still more sprawled away into shadow.
"There's writing on the bones," Adian said,
striding down the steps and onto the bone floor.
Aelin grimaced.
"Careful," Rowan said,
as Adian went to the nearest wall. Her cousin lifted a hand in lazy dismissal.
"It's in every language, all in different handwriting,"
Adian marveled, holding his torch aloft as he moved along the wall.
"Listen to this one. I am a liar, I am a thief. I took my sister's husband and laughed while I did it."
A pause. He silently read another.
"None of this writing... I don't think these were good people."
Aelin scanned the bone temple.
"We should be quick," she said. "Really damn quick. Adian, you take that wall, Kaol the center, Rowan the right. I'll grab the back. Careful of where you wave your fire.
Gods help them if they unwittingly placed a torch near the hellfire." She took a step down, and then another, then the last one onto the bone floor. A shudder crawled through her, and she glanced at Rowan out of instinct. His tight face told her all she needed to know, but he still said,
"This is a bad place."
Kaol strode past them, his sword out.
"Then let's find this hellfire supply and get out."
"Right." All around them, the empty eyes of the skulls in the walls, in the structures, the pillars in the center of the room, seemed to watch.
"Seems like this God of Truth," Adian called from his wall, "was more of a sin-eater than anything. You should read some of the things people wrote, the horrible things they did. I think this was a place for them to be buried, and to confess on the bones of other sinners."
"No wonder no one wanted to come here,"
Aelin muttered, as she strode off into the dark. The temple went on and on, and they found supplies, but no whisper of scavengers or other residents. Drugs, money, jewelry, all hidden inside skulls and within some of the bone crypts on the floor, but no hellfire. Their cautious steps on the bone floor were the only sounds. Aelin moved deeper and deeper into the gloom. Rowan soon cleared his side of the temple and joined her in the back, exploring the alcoves and little hallways that branched off into the slumbering dark.
"The language,"
Aelin said to him.
"It gets older and older the farther back we go. The way they spell the words, I mean."
Rowan twisted toward her from where he'd been carefully opening a sarcophagus. She doubted an ordinary man would be able to shift the stone lid.
"Some of them even date their confessions. I just saw one from 700 years ago."
"Makes you seem young, doesn't it?"
He gave her a wry smile. She quickly looked away. The bone floor clicked as he stepped toward her.
"Aelin?"
She swallowed hard, staring at a carved bone near her head.
"I killed a man for sport when I was 20, and never told anyone where I buried him. I kept his finger bone in a drawer."
"Dated 900 years ago."
900.
Aelin studied the darkness beyond, If the Shadow Market dated back to Gavin, then this place had to have been built before it, or around the same time. The God of Truth. She drew Jamaris from across her back, and Rowan tensed.
What is it?
She examined the flawless blade. The Sword of Truth. That's what they called Jamaris. Legend said the bearer, Gavin, could see the truth when he wielded it.
And?
Mala blessed Brannan, and she blessed Goldrin. She peered into the gloom. What if there was a God of Truth? A Sin Eater? What if he blessed Gavin and this sword? Rowan now stared toward the ancient blackness.
You think Gavin used this temple?
Aelin weighed the mighty sword in her hands.
What sins did you confess to, Gavin?
She whispered into the dark. Deep into the tunnels they went. So far that when Adian's triumphant cry of, "Found it!" reached Aelin and Rowan, she could barely hear it, and barely cared. Not when she stood before the back wall, the wall behind the altar of what had no doubt been the original temple. Here the bones were nearly crumbling with age, the writing almost impossible to read. The wall behind the altar was of pure stone, white marble, and carved in word marks. And in the center was a giant rendering of the eye of Elena. Cold. It was so cold in here that their breath clouded in front of them, mingling.
Whoever this God of Truth was,
Rowan murmured, as if trying not to be overheard by the dead.
He was not a benevolent sort of deity.
No, with a temple built from the bones of murderers and thieves and worse. She doubted this god had been a particular favorite. No wonder he'd been forgotten. Aelin stepped up to the stone. Jamaris turned icy in her hand, so frigid her fingers splayed, and she dropped the sword on the altar floor and backed away. Its clang against the bones was like thunder. Rowan was instantly at her side, his swords out. The stone wall before them groaned. It began shifting, the symbols rotating, altering themselves. From the flicker of her memory, she heard the words, "It is only with the eye that one can see rightly." "Honestly?" Aelin said, as the wall at last stopped rearranging itself from the proximity of the sword. A new intricate array of word marks had formed. "I don't know why these coincidences keep surprising me."
"Can you read it?"
Rowan asked. Adian called their names, and Rowan called back, telling them both to come. Aelin stared up at the carvings.
"It might take me some time."
"Do it. I don't think it was chance that we found this place."
Aelin shook off her shiver. No, nothing was ever chance. Not when it came to Elena and the word keys. So she loosed a breath and began.
It's about Elena and Gavin, she said. The first panel here,
she pointed to a stretch of symbols, describes them as the first king and queen of Otterlin, how they were mated. Then it jumps back to the war. Footsteps sounded, and light flickered, as Adian and Kaol reached them. Kaol whistled.
"I have a bad feeling about this," Adian said.
He frowned at the giant rendering of the eye, and then at the one around Aelin's neck.
"Get comfortable," she said.
Aelin read a few more lines, deciphering and decoding. So hard. The word marks were so damn hard to read. It describes the demon wars with the Volg that had been left here after the first war. And, she read the line again, and the Volg this time were led, her blood chilled, by one of the three kings. The king who remained trapped here after the gate was sealed. It says that to look upon a king, to look upon a Volg king was to gaze into, she shook her head, madness? Despair? I don't know that symbol. He could take any form, but he appeared to them now as a handsome man with golden eyes. The eyes of the Volg kings. She scanned the next panel. They did not know his true name, so they called him Erewhon, the Dark King. Adian said, "Then Elena and Gavin battled him, your magic necklace saved their asses, and Elena called him by his true name, distracting him enough for Gavin to slay him."
"Yes, yes," Aelin said, waving a hand. No.
No,
Kaol said. Aelin read further, and her heart skipped a beat.
What is it?
Rowan demanded, as if his fey ears had noted her heart's stutter. She swallowed hard, running a shaking finger under a line of symbols.
This is Gavin's confessional, from his deathbed.
None of them spoke.
Her voice trembled as she said,
They did not slay him, not by sword, or fire, or water, or might could Erewhon be slain or his body be destroyed. The eye.
Aelin touched her hand to the necklace.
The metal was warm.
The eye contained him. Only for a short time. No, not contained, but put him to sleep?
I have a very, very bad feeling about this,
Adian said.
So they built him a sarcophagus of iron and some sort of indestructible stone, and they put it in a sealed tomb beneath a mountain, a crypt so dark that there was no air, no light. Upon the labyrinth of doors, she read, they put symbols, unbreakable by any thief or key or force.
You're saying that they never killed Erewhon,
Kaol said. Gavin had been Dorian's childhood hero, she recalled, and the story had been a lie. Elena had lied to her.
Where did they bury him?
Rowan asked softly.
They buried him.
Her hands shook so badly that she lowered them to her sides. They buried him in the Black Mountains and built a keep atop the tomb, so that the noble family who dwelled above might forever guard it.
There are no Black Mountains in Otterlin,
Kaol said. Aelin's mouth went dry.
Rowan?
She said quietly.
How do you say Black Mountains in the old language?
A pause, and then a loosened breath.
Morath,
Rowan said. She turned to them, her eyes wide. For a moment, they all just stared at one another.
What are the odds, she said, that the king is sending his forces down to Morath by mere coincidence?
What are the odds,
Adian countered,
that our illustrious king has acquired a key that can unlock any door, even a door between worlds, and his second-in-command happens to own the very place where Erewhon is buried?
The king is insane,
Kaol said.
If he plans to raise Erewhon.
Who says he hasn't already? Adian asked. Aelin glanced at Rowan. His face was grim.
If there is a Volg king in this world, we need to move fast. Get those word keys and banish them all back to their hellhole.
She nodded.
Why now, though? He's had the two keys for at least a decade. Why bring the Volg over now?
It would make sense,
Kaol said.
If he's doing it in anticipation of raising Erewhon again, to have an army ready for him to lead.
Aelin's breathing was shallow. The summer solstice is in 10 days. If we bring magic down on the solstice, when the sun is strongest, there's a good chance my power will be greater then, too. She turned to Adian. Tell me you found a lot of hellfire. His nod wasn't as reassuring as she'd hoped. Chapter 51 Manon and her 13 stood around a table in a room deep within the witch's barracks.
You know why I called you here, Manon said.
None of them replied. None of them sat. They'd barely spoken to her since butchering that tribe in the White Fangs. And then today, more news, more requests.
The Duke asked me to pick another coven to use. A Blackbeak coven.
Silence.
I'd like your suggestions.
They didn't meet her eyes, didn't utter a word. Manon snapped down her iron teeth.
You would dare defy me?
Sorrel cleared her throat, attention on the table.
Never you, Manon. But we defy that human worm's right to use our bodies as if they were his own. Your High Witch has given orders that will be obeyed.
You might as well name the 13, Asterin said, the only one of them holding Manon's gaze. Her nose was still swollen and bruised from the beating.
For we would sooner that be our fate than hand over our sisters. And you all agree with this? That you wish to breed demon offspring until your bodies break apart?
We are Blackbeaks, Asterin said, her chin high. We are no one's slaves, and we will not be used as such. If the price for that is never returning to the Wastes, then so be it.
None of the others so much as flinched. They'd all met. They'd discussed this beforehand. What to say to her? As if she were in need of managing. Was there anything else you all decided in your little council meeting?
There are things, Manon,
Sorrel said.
Things that you need to hear.
Betrayal. This was what mortals called betrayal. I don't give a shit about what you fools dared believe I need to hear. The only thing I need to hear is the sound of you saying, yes, wing leader, and the name of a god's damned coven.
Pick one yourself, Asterin snapped.
The witches shifted. Not a part of the plan, was it? Manon stalked around the table to Asterin, past the other witches who didn't dare turn to face her. You have been nothing but a waste from the minute you set foot in this keep. I don't care if you have flown at my side for a century. I am going to put you down like the yapping dog you are.
Do it, Asterin hissed. Rip my throat out. Your grandmother will be so proud that you finally did.
Sorrel was at Manon's back.
Is that a challenge?
Manon said too quietly. Asterin's gold-flecked black eyes danced.
It's a...
But the door opened and shut. A young man with golden hair now stood in the room, his black stone collar gleaming in the torchlight.
He shouldn't have gotten in.
There had been witches everywhere, and she'd set sentinels from another coven to guard the halls so that none of the Duke's men could catch them unawares. As one, the 13 turned toward the handsome young man. And as one, they flinched as he smiled, and a wave of darkness crashed into them. Darkness without end, darkness even Manon's eyes couldn't penetrate, and Manon was again standing before that Kraken witch, a dagger in her hand.
We pity you for what you do to your children. You force them to kill and hurt and hate until there is nothing left inside of them. Of you. That is why you are here.
The Kraken wept.
Because of the threat you posed to the monster you call Grandmother. When you chose mercy and you saved your rival's life.
Manon violently shook her head, blinking.
Then it was gone.
There was only darkness, and the 13, shouting to one another, struggling, and... A golden-haired young man had been in that room with the yellow legs, Alid had said. Manon started prowling through the darkness, navigating the room by memory and smell. Some of her 13 were nearby, some had backed against the walls. And the otherworldly reek of the man, of the demon inside him. The smell wrapped around her fully, and Manon drew Wind Cleaver. Then there he was, chuckling as someone, Ghislaine, started screaming. Manon had never heard that sound. She'd never heard any of them scream with fear and pain. Manon hurtled into a blind sprint and tackled him to the ground. No sword. She didn't want a sword for this execution. Light cracked around her, and there was his handsome face and that collar.
Wing leader,
he grinned, in a voice that was not from this world. Manon's hands were around his throat, squeezing, her nails ripping through his skin. Were you sent here? She demanded. Her eyes met his, and the ancient malice in them shrank back.
Get away,
he hissed. Manon did no such thing. Were you sent here? She roared. The young man surged up, but then Asterin was there, pinning his legs.
Make him bleed,
she said from behind Manon. The creature continued thrashing, and in the darkness, some of the 13 were still shouting in agony and terror. Who sent you? Manon bellowed. His eyes shifted, turning blue, turning clear, It was with a young man's voice that he said,
"Kill me, please. Please kill me. Roland. My name was Roland. Tell my..."
Then blackness spread across his eyes again, along with pure panic at whatever he beheld in Manon's face, and in Asterin's over her shoulder. The demon inside the man shrieked, "Get away!" She'd heard and seen enough. Manon squeezed harder, her iron nails shredding through mortal flesh and muscle. Black, reeking blood coated her hand, and she ripped harder into him, until she got to the bone and slashed through it, and his head thumped against the floor. Manon could have sworn he sighed. The darkness vanished, and Manon was instantly on her feet, gore dripping from her hands as she surveyed the damage. Ghislaine sobbed in the corner. All the color leached from her rich, dark skin. Thea and Kaya were both tear-stained and silent, the two lovers gaping at each other. And Etta and Briar, both of her shadows, both born and raised in darkness. They were on their hands and knees, puking, right alongside the green-eyed demon twins, Faelene and Fallon. The rest of the 13 were unharmed, still flush with color, some panting from the momentary surge of rage and energy, but fine. Had only some of them been targeted? Manon looked at Asterin, at Sorrel and Vesta and Lynn and Imogen, then at the ones that had been drained. They all met her gaze this time. "Get away," the demon had screamed, as if in surprise and terror, after looking her in the eyes. Those who had been affected, their eyes were ordinary colors, brown and blue and green. But the ones who hadn't, black eyes flecked with gold. And when he'd looked at Manon's eyes, gold eyes had always been prized among blackbeaks. She'd never wondered why. But now wasn't the time, not with this reeking blood soaking into her skin. "This was a reminder," Manon said, her voice bouncing hollowly off the stones. She turned from the room. "Leave them to each other. Get rid of that body." Manon waited until Kaltain was alone, drifting up one of the forgotten spiraling staircases of Morath, before she pounced. The woman didn't flinch as Manon pinned her against the wall, her iron nails digging into Kaltain's pale, bare shoulders. "Where does the shadow fire come from?" Dark, empty eyes met hers.
"From me."
"Why you? What magic is it? Vog power?" Manon studied the collar around the woman's thin throat. Kaltain gave a small, dead smile.
"It was mine, to start. Then it was melded with another source. And now, it is the power of every world, every life."
"Nonsense." Manon pushed her harder into the dark stone. "How do you take that collar off?"
"It does not come off."
Manon bared her teeth. "And what do you want with us? To put collars on us?"
"They want kings,"
Kaltain breathed, her eyes flickering with some strange, sick delight.
"Mighty kings. Not you."
More drivel. Manon growled, but then there was a delicate hand on her wrist. And it burned. Oh, gods, it burned. And her bones were melting. Her iron nails had become molten ore. Her blood was boiling. Manon leaped back from Kaltain, and only gripping her wrist told her that the injuries weren't real. "I'm going to kill you," Manon hissed. But shadow fire danced on Kaltain's fingertips, even as the woman's face went blank again, without a word, as if she had done nothing. Kaltain walked up the stairs and vanished. Alone in the stairwell, Manon cradled her arm, the echo of pain still reverberating through her bones. Slaughtering that tribe with Windcleaver, she told herself, had been a mercy. Chapter 52. As they left the Sin Eater's temple, Kaol marveled at how strange it was to be working with Aelin and her court. How strange it was not to be fighting her for once. He shouldn't have even gone with them, given how much there was to do. Half the rebels had left Rifthold, more fleeing every day. And those who remained were pushing to relocate to another city. He'd kept them in line as much as he could, relying on Nezrin to back him up whenever they started to bring up his own past with the king. There were still people going missing, being executed. Still people whom they rescued as often as they could from the butchering blocks. He would keep doing it until he was the last rebel left in this city. He would stay to help them, to protect them. But if what they learned about Erewhon was true, gods help them all. Back on the city street, he turned in time to see Rowan offer a helping hand to pull Aelin out of the sewers. She seemed to hesitate, but then gripped it, her hand swallowed by his. A team. Solid and unbreaking. The Fey Prince hoisted her up and set her on her feet. Neither of them immediately let go of the other. Kaol waited. Waited for that twist and tug of jealousy. For the bile of it to sting him. But there was nothing. Only a flickering relief, perhaps, that Aelin had Rowan. He must be feeling truly sorry for himself, he decided. Footsteps sounded, and they all went still, weapons drawn, just as, "I've been looking for you for an hour," Nezrin said, hurrying out of the alley shadows. "What's..." She noticed their grim faces. They'd left the hellfire down there, hidden in a sarcophagus for safekeeping, and to keep themselves from being melted should things go very wrong. He was surprised Aelin had let him know that much, though how she planned to get into the castle she hadn't told him. "Just tell Ress and Brello and the others to stay the hell away from the clock tower," was her only warning so far. He'd almost demanded to know what her plans were for the other innocents in the castle, but it had been nice to have one afternoon with no fighting, with no one hating him, to feel like he was part of their unit.
"I'll fill you in later," Kaol said to her, but Nezrin's face was pale. "What is it?"
Aelin, Rowan, and Adian stalked up to them with that unnatural, immortal silence. Nezrin squared her shoulders.
"I received word from Ren. He got into some minor trouble on the border, but he's fine. He has a message for you. For us."
She brushed back a strand of her inky hair. Her hand trembled slightly. Kaol braced himself, fought against the urge to put a hand on her arm.
"The king," Nezrin went on, "has been building an army down in Morath, under Duke Parrington's supervision. The Volg guards around Rifthold are the first of them. More are coming up this way."
Volg foot soldiers, then. Morath, it seemed, might very well be their first or last battleground. Adian cocked his head, the wolf incarnate. "How many?"
"Too many," Nezrin said. "We haven't gotten a full count. Some are camped inside mountains surrounding the war camp. Never out all at once, never in full sight. But it's an army greater than any he's assembled before."
Kaol's palms became slick with sweat.
"And more than that," Nezrin said, her voice hoarse. "The king now has an aerial cavalry of Iron Teeth witches, a host 3,000 strong, who have been secretly training in the Farian Gap to ride wyverns that the king has somehow managed to create and breed. Gods above."
Aelin lifted her head, gazing up at the brick wall as if she could see that aerial army there, the movement revealing the ring of scars around her neck.
"Dorian.
They needed Dorian on the throne. Needed this shut down."
"You are certain of this?" Adian said.
Rowan was staring at Nezrin, his face the portrait of a cold, calculating warrior. And yet he'd somehow moved closer to Aelin. Nezrin said tightly,
"We lost many spies to attain that information."
Kaol wondered which of them had been her friends. Aelin spoke, her voice flat and hard. "Just to make sure I have it right, we are now facing 3,000 bloodthirsty Iron Teeth witches on wyverns, and a host of deadly soldiers gathering in the south of Otterlin, likely to cut off any alliance between Terrasen and the southern kingdoms."
"Leaving Terrasen stranded."
"Say it,"
Kaol silently beseeched her.
"Say that you need Dorian free and alive." Adian mused. Melisande might be capable of uniting with us.
He pinned Kaol with an assessing stare. A general stare.
Do you think your father knows about the wyverns and witches? Aniel is the closest city to the Farian Gap.
His blood chilled. Was that why his father had been so keen to get him home?
He sensed Adian's next question before the general spoke.
He doesn't wear a black ring,
Kaol said.
But I doubt you'd find him a pleasant ally, if he bothered to ally with you at all.
Things to consider,
Rowan said.
Should we need an ally to punch through the southern lines?
Gods, they were actually talking about this. War. War was coming, and they might not all survive it.
So what are they waiting for? Adian said, pacing. Why not attack now?
Aelin's voice was soft. Cold. Me. They're waiting for me to make my move.
None of them contradicted her. Kaol's voice was strained as he shoved aside his swarming thoughts.
Anything else?
Nezrin reached into her tunic and pulled out a letter. She handed it to Adian. From your second in command. They all worry for you.
There's a tavern down the block. Give me 5 minutes and I'll have a reply for you,
Adian said, already striding away. Nezrin followed him, giving Kaol a silent nod.
The general said over his shoulder to Rowan and Aelin, his heavy hood concealing any telltale features. I'll see you at home.
Meeting over. But Aelin suddenly said, thank you. Nezrin paused, somehow knowing the queen had spoken to her.
Aelin put a hand on her heart.
For all that you're risking, thank you.
Nezrin's eyes flickered as she said,
long live the queen.
But Aelin had already turned away. Nezrin met Kaol's gaze, and he followed after her in Adian. An indestructible army, possibly led by Erewhon, if the King of Otterlin were insane enough to raise him. An army that could crush any human resistance.
But maybe not if they allied with magic wielders.
That is, if the magic wielders, after all that had been done to them, even wanted to bother saving their world.
Talk to me,
Rowan said from behind her, as Aelin stormed down street after street. She couldn't.
She couldn't form the thoughts, let alone the words.
How many spies and rebels had lost their lives to get that information? And how much worse would it feel when she sent people to their deaths? When she had to watch her soldiers butchered by those monsters?
If Elena had thrown her a bone tonight, somehow leading that opium monger to the Sin Eater's temple so that they might find it. She wasn't feeling particularly grateful.
Aelin,
Rowan said,
quietly enough for only her and the alley rats to hear. She'd barely survived Baba Yellowlegs. How would anyone survive an army of witches trained in combat?
He gripped her elbow, forcing her to stop.
We'll face this together,
he breathed, his eyes shining bright and canines gleaming.
As we have in the past, to whatever end.
She trembled.
Trembled like a god's damned coward, and yanked free,
stalking away. She didn't even know where she was going, only that she had to walk, had to find a way to sort herself out, sort the world out, before she stopped moving, or else she would never move again.
Wyverns, witches, a new, even bigger army. The alley pressed in on her, sealing as tightly as one of those flooded sewer tunnels.
Talk to me,
Rowan said again, keeping a respectful distance behind. She knew these streets. A few blocks down, she would find one of the Vogue sewer entrances. Maybe she'd jump right in and hack a few of them to pieces. See what they knew about the Dark King Erewhon, and whether he was still slumbering under that mountain. Maybe she wouldn't bother with questions at all. There was a strong, broad hand at her elbow, yanking her back against a hard male body. But the scent wasn't Rowan's. And the knife at her throat, the blade pressing so hard that her skin stung and split.
Going somewhere, princess?
Lorcan breathed into her ear. Rowan had thought he knew fear.
He had thought he could face any danger with a clear head and ice in his veins. Until Lorkin appeared from the shadows, so fast that Rowan hadn't even scented him, and put that knife against Aelin's throat.
You move,
Lorkin snarled in Aelin's ear,
and you die. You speak, and you die.
Understand? Aelin said nothing. If she nodded, she'd slice her throat open on the blade. Blood was shining there already, just above her collarbone, filling the alley with its scent. The smell of it alone sent Rowan sliding into a frozen, murderous calm.
Understand?
Lorkin hissed, jostling her enough that her blood flowed a bit faster. Still, she said nothing, obeying his order. Lorkin chuckled.
Good. I thought so.
The world slowed and spread around Rowan with sharp clarity, revealing every stone of the buildings and the street, and the refuse and rubbish around them. Anything to give him an advantage, to use as a weapon. If he'd had his magic, he would have choked the air from Lorkin's lungs by now, would have shattered through Lorkin's own dark shields with half a thought. If he'd had his magic, he would have had a shield of their own around them from the start, so this ambush could never happen. Aelin's eyes met his. And fear. That was genuine fear shining there. She knew she was in a compromised position. They both knew that no matter how fast he was, she was, Lorkin's slice would be faster. Lorkin smiled at Rowan, his dark hood off for once, no doubt so that Rowan could see every bit of triumph in Lorkin's black eyes.
No words, Prince.
Why? Was all Rowan could ask. Every action, every possible plan still left him too far away. He wondered whether Lorkin realized that if he killed her, Lorkin himself would be next. Then Maeve. And maybe the world for spite. Lorkin craned his head to look at Aelin's face. Her eyes narrowed to slits.
Where is the word key?
Aelin tensed, and Rowan willed her not to speak, not to taunt Lorkin.
We don't have it,
Rowan said. Rage, unending cataclysmic rage, pounded through him. Exactly what Lorkin wanted. Exactly how Rowan had witnessed the demi-fae warrior manipulate their enemies for centuries. So Rowan locked that rage down. Tried to, at least.
I could snap this neck of yours so easily,
Lorkin said, grazing his nose against the side of her throat. Aelin went rigid. The possessiveness in that touch alone half blinded him with feral wrath. It was an effort to stifle it again, as Lorkin murmured onto her skin.
You're so much better when you don't open that hideous mouth.
We don't have the key,
Rowan said again. He'd slaughter Lorkin in the way only immortals learned and liked to kill. Slowly, viciously, creatively. Lorkin's suffering would be thorough.
What if I told you we were working for the same side?
Lorkin said.
I'd tell you that Maeve works for only one side. Her own.
Maeve didn't send me here.
Rowan could almost hear the words Aelin was struggling to keep in. Liar. Piece of shit liar.
Then who did?
Rowan demanded.
I left.
If we're on the same side, then put your rutting knife down.
Rowan growled. Lorkin chuckled.
I don't want to hear the princess yapping. What I have to say applies to both of you.
Rowan waited, taking every second to assess and reassess their surroundings, the odds. At last, Lorkin loosened the blade slightly. Blood slid down Aelin's neck, onto her suit.
You made the mistake of your short, pathetic mortal life when you gave Maeve that ring.
Through the lethal calm, Rowan felt the blood drain from his face.
You should have known better,
Lorkin said, still gripping Aelin around the waist.
You should have known she wasn't some sentimental fool, pining after her lost love. She had plenty of things from Athril. Why would she want his ring? His ring and not Goldrin?
Stop dancing around it and tell us what it is.
But I'm having so much fun. Rowan leashed his temper so hard that he choked on it.
The ring,
Lorcan said,
wasn't some family heirloom from Athril. She killed Athril. She wanted the keys and the ring, and he refused, and she killed him. While they fought, Brannon stole them away, hiding the ring with Goldrin and bringing the keys here. Didn't you ever wonder why the ring was in that scabbard? A demon-hunting sword, and a ring to match.
If Maeve wants to kill demons, Rowan said, we won't complain.
The ring doesn't kill them. It grants immunity from their power. A ring forged by Mala herself. The Volg could not harm Athril when he wore it.
Aelin's eyes widened even more, the scent of her fear shifting to something far deeper than the dread of bodily harm.
The bearer of that ring,
Lorcan went on, smiling at the terror coating her smell,
need never fear being enslaved by Wordstone.
You handed her your own immunity.
That doesn't explain why you left.
Lorcan's face tightened.
She slaughtered her lover for the ring, for the keys. She will do far worse to attain them now that they are on the playing board again. And once she has them, my queen will make herself a god.
So?
The knife remained too close to Aelin's neck to risk attacking.
It will destroy her.
Rowan's rage stumbled.
You plan to get the keys, to keep them from her.
I plan to destroy the keys.
You give me your word key,
Lorcan said, opening the fist he'd held against Aelin's abdomen,
and I'll give you the ring.
Sure enough, in his hand shone a familiar gold ring.
You shouldn't be alive,
Rowan said.
If you had stolen the ring and fled, she would have killed you already.
It was a trap. A pretty, clever trap.
I move quickly.
Lorcan had been hauling ass out of Wendlin. It didn't prove anything, though.
The others...
None of them know. You think I trust them not to say anything?
The Blood Oath makes betrayal impossible.
I'm doing this for her sake,
Lorcan said.
I'm doing this because I do not wish to see my queen become a demon herself.
I am obeying the oath in that regard.
Aelin was bristling now, and Lorcan closed his fingers around the ring again.
You're a fool, Rowan. You think only of the next few years, decades. What I am doing is for the sake of the centuries, for eternity. Maeve will send the others, you know, to hunt you. To kill you both. Let tonight be a reminder of your vulnerability. You will never know peace for a single moment. Not one. And even if we don't kill Aelin of the Wildfire, time will.
Rowan shut out the words. Lorcan peered at Aelin, his black hair shifting with the movement.
Think it over, princess. What is immunity worth? In a world where your enemies are waiting to shackle you, where one slip could mean becoming their eternal slave.
Aelin just bared her teeth. Lorcan shoved her away, and Rowan was already moving, lunging for her. She whirled, the built-in blades in her suit flashing free. But Lorcan was gone. After deciding that the slices on her neck were shallow and that she was in no danger of dying from them, Rowan didn't talk to her for the rest of the journey home. If Lorcan was right... No, he wasn't right. He was a liar and his bargain reeked of Maeve's tricks. Aelin pressed a handkerchief to her neck as they walked, and by the time they reached the apartment, the wounds had clotted. Adian, mercifully, was already in bed. Rowan strode right into their bedroom. She followed him in, but he reached the bathroom and quietly shut the door behind him. Running water gurgled a heartbeat later. A bath. He'd done a good job concealing it, and his rage had been... She'd never seen someone that wrathful. But she'd still seen the terror on his face. It had been enough to make her master her own fear as fire started crackling in her veins.
And she'd tried, God damn it, she'd tried, to find a way out of that hold. But Lorcan, Rowan had been right. Without her magic, she was no match for him. He could have killed her. All she had been able to think about, in spite of her kingdom, in spite of all she still had to do, was the fear in Rowan's eyes. And that it would be a shame if he never knew, if she never told him. Aelin cleaned her neck in the kitchen, washed the little bit of blood from her suit, and hung it in the living room to dry, then pulled on one of Rowan's shirts and climbed into bed. She barely heard any splashing. Maybe he was just lying in the tub, staring at nothing with that hollow expression he'd worn since Lorcan had removed the knife from her throat. Minutes passed, and she shouted goodnight to Adian, whose echoing goodnight rumbled through the walls. Then the bathroom door opened. A veil of steam rippled out, and Rowan appeared, a towel slung low across his hips. She took in the muscled abdomen, the powerful shoulders, but the emptiness in those eyes. She patted the bed. Come here. He stood there, his eyes lingering on her scabbed neck. We both are experts at clamming up, so let's make an agreement to talk right now like even-tempered, reasonable people. He didn't meet her gaze as he padded toward the bed and slumped down beside her, stretching out over the blankets. She didn't even reprimand him for getting the sheets wet, or mention that he could have taken half a minute to put on some clothes. Looks like our days of fun are over, she said, propping her head with a fist and staring down at him. He gazed blankly at the ceiling. Witches, dark lords, fey queens? If we make it through this alive, I'm going to take a nice, long vacation. His eyes were cold. Don't shut me out, she breathed.
Never, he murmured. That's not...
He rubbed his eyes with his thumb and forefinger.
I failed you tonight.
His words were a whisper in the darkness. Rowan.
He got close enough to kill you. If it had been another enemy, they might have.
The bed rumbled as he took a shuddering sigh and lowered his hand from his eyes. The raw emotion there made her bite her lip. Never, never did he let her see those things.
I failed you. I swore to protect you, and I failed tonight.
Rowan, it's fine.
It's not fine.
His hand was warm as it clamped on her shoulder. She let him turn her onto her back, and found him half on top of her as he peered into her face. His body was a massive, solid force of nature above hers. But his eyes, the panic lingered.
I broke your trust.
You did no such thing. Rowan, you told him you wouldn't hand over the key. He sucked in a breath, his broad chest expanding.
I would have. Gods, Aelin. He had me, and he didn't even know it. He could have waited another minute, and I would have told him, ring or no ring. Erewhon, witches, the king, Maeve. I would face all of them. But losing you...
He bowed his head, his breath warming her mouth as he closed his eyes.
I failed you tonight,
he murmured, his voice hoarse.
I'm sorry.
His pine and snow scent wrapped around her. She should move away, roll out of reach.
Don't touch me like that.
Yet there he was, his hand a brand on her bare shoulder, his body nearly covering hers. You have nothing to be sorry for, she whispered. I trust you, Rowan. He gave her a barely perceptible nod.
I missed you,
he said quietly, his gaze darting between her mouth and eyes.
When I was in Wendland, I lied when I said I didn't. From the moment you left, I missed you so much I went out of my mind. I was glad for the excuse to track Lorcan here, just to see you again. And tonight, when he had that knife at your throat.
The warmth of his calloused finger bloomed through her as he traced a path over the cut on her neck.
I kept thinking about how you might never know that I missed you with only an ocean between us. But if it was death separating us, I would find you. I don't care how many rules it would break. Even if I had to get all three keys myself and open a gate, I would find you again. Always.
She blinked back the burning in her eyes as he reached between their bodies and took her hand, guiding it up to lay against his tattooed cheek.
It was an effort to remember how to breathe, to focus on anything but that smooth, warm skin. He didn't tear his eyes away from hers, as she grazed her thumb along his sharp cheekbone, savoring each stroke. She caressed his face, that tattoo, never breaking his stare, even as it stripped her naked. "I'm sorry," he still seemed to say. She kept her stare locked on his as she let go of his face, and slowly, making sure he understood every step of the way, tilted her head back until her throat was arched and bared before him.
"Aelin,"
he breathed, not in reprimand or warning, but a plea. It sounded like a plea. He lowered his head to her exposed neck and hovered a hair's breadth away. She arched her neck farther, a silent invitation. Rowan let out a soft groan and grazed his teeth against her skin. One bite, one movement, was all it would take for him to rip out her throat. His elongated canines slid along her flesh, gently, precisely. She clenched the sheets to keep from running her fingers down his bare back and drawing him closer. He braced one hand beside her head, his fingers twining in her hair.
"No one else," she whispered. "I would never allow anyone else at my throat."
Showing him was the only way he'd understand that trust, in a manner that only the predatory fae side of him would comprehend.
"No one else," she said again.
He let out another low groan, answer and confirmation and request, and the rumble echoed inside her. Carefully, he closed his teeth over the spot where her lifeblood thrummed and pounded, his breath hot on her skin. She shut her eyes, every sense narrowing on that sensation, on the teeth and mouth at her throat, on the powerful body trembling with restraint above hers. His tongue flicked against her skin. She made a small noise that might have been a moan, or a word, or his name. He shuddered and pulled back, the cool air kissing her neck. Wildness. Pure wildness sparked in those eyes. Then he thoroughly, brazenly surveyed her body, his nostrils flaring delicately as he scented exactly what she wanted. Her breathing turned ragged as he dragged his stare to hers, hungry, feral, unyielding.
"Not yet,"
he said roughly, his own breathing uneven.
"Not now."
"Why?" It was an effort to remember speech with him looking at her like that, like he might eat her alive. Heat pounded through her core.
"I want to take my time with you, to learn every inch of you. And this apartment has very, very thin walls. I don't want to have an audience,"
he added as he leaned down again, brushing his mouth over the cut at the base of her throat.
"When I make you moan, Aelin."
Oh, by the word. She was in trouble. So much rutting trouble. And when he said her name like that... "This changes things," she said, hardly able to get the words out.
"Things have been changing for a while already. We'll deal with it."
She wondered how long his resolve to wait would last if she lifted her face to claim his mouth with her own, if she ran her fingers down the groove of his spine, if she touched him lower than that. But... Wyverns, witches, army, Erewhon. She loosed a heavy breath. "Sleep," she mumbled. "We should sleep." He swallowed again, slowly peeling himself away from her and strode to the closet to dress. Honestly, it was an effort not to leap after him and rip that damn towel away. Maybe she should make Adian go stay somewhere else, just for a night. And then she would burn in hell for all eternity for being the most selfish, awful person to ever grace the earth. She forced herself to put her back to the closet, not trusting herself to so much as look at Rowan without doing something infinitely stupid. Oh, she was in so much God's damned trouble.
Chapter 53. Drink.
the demon prince coaxed in a lover's croon.